incredible match to kick off this Christmas edition of Monday Night Raw.
Oh boy, John going to the top. You don't see this very often.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
The Solemn Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 361 of the Solemn Monster Sounds Off, the final podcast for 2014 here on Friday, December 26, 2014, the day after Christmas. We don't take no days off. We keep going, even through the holidays here. We don't skip a beat. Here with the Sound Off, the 2013 Stitcher Award nominee for Best Sports Commentary, 2014 Podbean Top 10 Most Popular Podcast, What Will 2015 Bring? Hopefully bigger and better things. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for listening all year long. It's been a banner year for the Sound Off, and like I said before, we keep going week after week. You can listen to this show on thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes. You can leave us some feedback in iTunes and Stitcher as well, by the way, for those of you who are not aware. That's always helpful to the podcast. Also got to thank everybody who has used our Audible URL. You guys are amazing. We have surpassed the mark I was hoping to set for the month of December. We blew past it within a few days of last week's show. So thank you for that. Keep signing up. audibletrial.com/solemonster. You could try out the service free for 30 days using our URL. You also get one free audio book of your choice that you get to download, and no matter what happens, whether you stick with it, whether you don't stick with it, it's yours. You own it. You get to keep it no matter what. It could be a wrestling book. It could be a non-wrestling book, non-fiction, fiction, whatever floats your boat. You don't have to pay the $20 or $30 for the audio book. You get it for free. So audibletrial.com/solemonster. Also got to thank everybody who made a PayPal donation to the show this week. It is after all the holiday season. You can make a donation on thesolemonster.com, or if you want to, use the email address thesolemonster@gmail.com to make a donation. Thank you to Hytham, the Equalizer Alnawasser, the Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, Kingpin Jason Kaiser, Muhammad the Mutilator Asgar, the Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty, Guilty as Charged, Mark Court, No Remorse, Christopher Morris, Hot Stuff, Hector Pena, Matt Gold Rush Golden, Ninja, Nick Meyer, Mac Daddy, Matt Moretz. He and his fiance do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Did you know that? I guess that means they can join the UFC also, since apparently that's the only criteria you need to be a fighter these days. So thank you to everybody who made a donation. I really appreciate it. Again, you can do so on thesolemonster.com. It's been a strong year for us, and let's hope that keeps up in 2015. And you can check out our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. You got to type in the full name of the show. Our store has only been up for about 3.5 months, and it's been an incredible 3.5 months. It hasn't even been up the full year. And we have just got dozens upon dozens and dozens of shirts that are out there right now. 11 different designs up, more coming in the new year. So definitely check us out on prowrestlingtees.com. And I also have to say, for those of you that are happy, there is a Sound Off this week despite the holiday. And I know not everybody does a show around the holidays. It gets kind of slow. Well, we're not like everybody else. And so not only are you getting a Sound Off 2 days early, mind you, the day after Christmas, but you might also want to keep your eyes peeled this weekend because there will be a Sound Off Extra going up on our YouTube channel, most likely tomorrow, which is Saturday the 27th, for those of you who, I don't know when you're listening to this. But check that out because I had a chance to watch the Iron Sheik documentary. There was a documentary done on him and his life by a couple of Iron Sheik fans. And it was released earlier this year. I think it got some top honors at a film festival. I had a chance to watch it. And so I'm going to have a video up on our YouTube channel with a full review. My thoughts on the Iron Sheik movie. Very interesting stuff. You'll definitely want to check that out. So now is as good a time as any. If you haven't already done so, head on over to our YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button. So that way when this video and others go up, you will be the first to be notified of it. YouTube.com/TheSolemonster is the quickest way to get there. So I hope everybody had a very Merry Christmas. What we're going to do here, because there is no TNA to review, there was the final official episode of Impact on Spike TV this past Thursday. I had completely forgotten about it. It didn't help that I think they moved it to midnight, which I'm sure TNA was just thrilled with. And it's too bad, you know, they went out, the Spike era lasted almost a decade, and they went out with a whimper instead of a bang. But there's no real TNA news to talk about, no Lucha Underground this week. Even NXT was mostly a year-in-review show, although there was one fresh match, a very good match that we'll talk about. So what we're going to do here, I figured this would be a good opportunity to give some predictions. So what we're going to do, we're going to have a little segment before the Raw review. My WWE predictions for 2015. We'll go through those. We'll talk about Raw. And then we'll get into your mailbag questions. But first, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this unfortunate piece of business here with Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash in the news this week. He was arrested on Christmas Eve, as was his son. I believe he's 18 years old. Tristan Nash, also arrested. His son came home drunk after some kind of dispute with his girlfriend. Things got physical with him and his father. Who knows who may have instigated what. It sounds like the son most likely did. But Nash got his son down on the floor. He was basically holding him down. His son scratched Nash by the eye. He had like a bloody cut in his mugshot photo by the eye. Cops came. They arrested Nash because Nash was not being cooperative with them, which is something you should always do. Be cooperative with the police when they get called to your house. Probably a good idea. He told them to get a warrant when they wanted to take a photograph of his injury, and so that's when they cuffed him and they arrested him, and the drama continued back at the house a few hours later with the son and the mother. His uncle came over. The son started threatening the mother. The cops came back. They arrested the son. Just a sad situation. Nash is out now. He posted on Twitter, "To those who have given their love, the best gift I could receive. The pain of the last 24 hours will never be erased." It was so weird for me to read this and to hear that Kevin Nash was in jail while Scott Hall was just sitting at home tweeting. It's just, talk about a role reversal here. That's not what I was expecting. I would say that Nash is probably the most stable member of that entire Click contingent. I guess Triple H, you could say Triple H is, but I don't know, Nash always seemed to me that he was the guy that always seemed to have his head screwed on the right way. And when Sean Waltman almost tried to kill himself, not almost, he tried to kill himself down in Mexico and all the drug issues that he's had, it was Kevin Nash who stepped in and made the phone call to Triple H and helped get Waltman the help that he needed. I mean, Scott Hall, God, I mean, talk about all the issues that Scott Hall has had over the years and Kevin Nash trying to help him out. And Nash was the one that you never really heard about getting into any sort of trouble. I mean, you could say a lot of things about Kevin Nash as far as the wrestling business is concerned, but he wasn't that guy. You know, he's the one who actually seemed to be the most normal, I guess, of the bunch. Except when he's had a few glasses of wine and hops on Twitter after midnight. That usually doesn't end well. So this whole thing was just very surprising. I tell you what was also surprising, in all honesty, all kidding aside, how many jokes I saw people making at this guy's expense. I mean, I don't know. I didn't make light of it. I posted about it on Twitter. I did not make one single joke about it because I just think it's an awful situation for the guy to be in. It's really a no-win situation for him. I mean, put yourself in his shoes in this case. We don't know all the facts yet, but you can kind of piece it together. And it's an awful situation for any father, I think, to be in. And to me, it just didn't feel appropriate to make light of it. I saw people making the usual, you know, torn quad jokes and stuff. To me, there's a time and a place for that. This was not the time or the place, I felt. I mean, to each their own. I think any domestic abuse incident, there's really nothing funny about that. So hopefully he gets his family situation sorted out. WWE put a statement out distancing themselves. Boy, they didn't waste any time. They put a statement out saying that Kevin Nash has not been a full-time active performer on our roster since 2004, which is kind of true. I mean, he did wrestle a match for them in 2011 against Triple H, but I guess they're just pretending that whole storyline never happened. I think the rest of us would also like to forget that whole storyline ever happened. Nash was scheduled to appear on that Raw reunion special that they announced the week before the Royal Rumble on the Go Home show. They're having, I guess maybe it's the old school Raw, but they're calling it Raw Reunion. And Hogan, Nash, Hall, I think Shawn Michaels had all been announced for it. It looks like they were going to do some kind of NWO reunion on that show. WWE said they suspended Kevin Nash from his Legends deal until this whole legal situation is sorted out. So if it gets taken care of in the next few weeks, I guess it's possible he'll be on that show. I want to say it's January 19th, but I could be wrong. It's possible, but right now it doesn't look as though he will be there, so I don't know if that means they'll end up scrapping whatever plans they had for their little NWO reunion or not. I guess we'll have to find out. The timing, obviously, is shitty, but never a good time for something like that to happen, so hopefully everything works out. A really shitty way, I would say, to spend your Christmas Eve. Let's just put it that way. So with that, let's talk about the future. I can't predict the future. You can't predict the future, but we can try. Kind of what makes it fun. So I thought it would be fun to just rattle off some of my predictions, the Sala Monsters predictions for WWE coming up in the year 2015. 2014 was a big year for WWE for a lot of good reasons and a lot of bad reasons. A lot of shit happened this year in WWE. Batista came back after a 3 or 4 year absence. I think 4 years he was gone for. He came back. Didn't exactly work out, I think, the way they had hoped his return would. But he came back, and Daniel Bryan, that whole story, the way it ended up culminating at WrestleMania, him winning the championship and then being sidelined pretty much the entire rest of the year with a neck injury. That was just awful. Talk about awful timing for somebody. The launch of the WWE Network, which has both its good and bad. The new television deal with NBC Universal, which, look, I mean, they're going to make a lot of money off this deal, but the deal was not what people were expecting, and it hit the stock very hard. So I think at the end of the day, that was kind of disappointing for them. The Shield breaking up, I mean, the Wyatt family, I guess you could say, them breaking up as well. Just so many different things happened in WWE this year. So what does 2015 hold? Is it going to be a better year for wrestling? Is it going to be a worse year? I would like to think that we would have a rebound year, because this overall I don't think was a very strong year in terms of business. I don't get the sense that the product was really hot. If anything, Raw, I think, took a turn for the worse. I think most weeks it's very, very difficult to sit through an episode of Monday Night Raw. I would love to sit here and tell you that in 2015 I predict Raw's going to get better, Raw's going to go back to 2 hours, but we know that's not going to happen. WrestleMania season, I would expect the show is going to be more exciting and it'll be a lot easier to sit through week to week, but who the hell knows? So, with that being said, my predictions for WWE in 2015. John Cena, I predict, will not only tie Ric Flair's fake record of 16 title wins next year, which I think is inevitable. We all know Cena is tying the record. He's going to break the record. And I say fake number because it's actually more than 16 title wins, but 16 is the number they settled on. Even if you ask Ric Flair, he says it's more than 16. It might be as many as 23, depending on who you talk to. John Cena will not only tie the record, I predict he will, in fact, break the record and be a 17-time world champion before the year is over. Not a huge stretch. I'm sure there's a lot of people who probably feel the same way, but that is what I predict. I predict that all three members of The Shield, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, will be WWE champion at some point during the year. Dolph Ziggler, I predict, will also become WWE champion for the first time before the end of 2015, because you can only hold good talent down for so long, but his run will be brief. Do not expect a lengthy Dolph Ziggler title run. He's going to be the man. I'm not predicting that. I don't think Dolph Ziggler will ever be the man, but I do think he'll have the championship at some point next year. I predict that CM Punk will not fight in the UFC. And that could be for any number of reasons. He's going to get hurt. He won't be able to survive a training camp. And there are people who think that. There are people who think, hey, this guy's going to go do a camp wherever. You know, there's already rumors he may have picked a camp somewhere. And he's never going to make it through. Or his body will break down or something will happen. Either that or quite frankly, I could see a situation, because there have already been comments made by some members of the commission out in Vegas. And I mean, look, you can have Punk fight somewhere other than Las Vegas. But there have been some murmurs that, you know, the commission may not allow him to fight until he fights somewhere else first and gets some experience under his belt. Whatever the reason is, I feel as though CM Punk will not end up fighting in the Octagon in 2015. I really do. I have this feeling he will not end up fighting next year. So that is my prediction. However, on the other hand, Brock Lesnar, I predict, will return to the UFC, and he will fight there in 2015. Lesnar will fight in the UFC before CM Punk ever does. That is my prediction. And I will be very sad, by the way, when Brock Lesnar does go back to UFC, because that means he will no longer be in WWE. The Heyman-Lesnar pairing will no longer grace us with their presence on Monday Night Raw, and that makes me very sad. I predict that Bully Ray will be a surprise entrant in the 30-man Royal Rumble match coming up next month. I predict that Randy Savage will be inducted, finally, at long last, into the WWE Hall of Fame. I predict that Daniel Bryan will return, and he will be back in time for WrestleMania. Hard to say who his opponent will be, but I got a feeling he's coming back, and he'll make it back in time for Mania. Sting will obviously wrestle a match at WrestleMania next year. It looks like it'll be against Triple H. I still think there's an outside shot it could be Undertaker. Unless they go with the idea of a Sting versus Undertaker retirement match like I pitched last week, which Sting would lose, and then both men can ride off into the sunset, then it will not be Sting's final WWE match. It will not be his only match inside a WWE ring, despite what he has said about how he only wants to come back for one match. He only sees himself doing one match. Yeah, like Shawn Michaels, when he came back in 2002, I'm only doing the one match, and then 8 years later, he's having his retirement match. So if Sting gets The Undertaker, which I still think there's a chance he could, then yes, I do think that will probably be it for Sting. However, if he does not get The Undertaker, if he gets Triple H or John Cena or anybody else, I think it will be Sting's first of several matches next year. Big Dave Batista. I mentioned that he came back this year after 4 years away. Didn't exactly get the kind of response that they were probably hoping he would. I predict that Batista, through all of his Hollywood success, and I'm so happy for the guy, because I just think he's a good guy. I enjoy watching him as an actor and growing as an actor. I'm looking forward to seeing him in the Bond film. And frankly, he does not have any reason to come back to wrestling. My understanding when he came back, a lot of the reports were that, you know, he made the deal directly with Triple H, who's his buddy. It was a 2-year contract. Technically, I think Batista still is under contract to WWE, but they're just, you know, allowing him. I'm sure there were things built into the contract where if Hollywood opportunities came up, then that would supersede the wrestling, and so they're letting him do his thing. But my understanding is he's still technically under contract through next year to them. And I think that he will be back one last time to get that singles match for the title that he was promised in storyline, but he never received. Remember, he won the Royal Rumble, which entitled him to a singles match for the championship of WrestleMania. He never got that one-on-one championship opportunity, and in storyline, that's why he left. He asked Triple H for it, Triple H said no, and he's like, adios, and he left. And that was back in, what, June? So I predict he will be back for that title shot, probably against Roman Reigns, and he will put Roman over, he will make Roman look strong. Unfortunately for WWE, though, when Batista comes back, it'll be as a heel, but the fans will end up cheering him this time. So the poor guy will be miscast again, and the fans will just fuck everything up for WWE. So that's my prediction with Batista. Predicted Adam Cole of Ring of Honor and PWG fame will be signed to a WWE developmental contract. I just think he's too good not to be. He did, I think, at least one kind of camp or tryout for WWE either this year or last year. And I guess they didn't pick him, and so he ended up signing a contract with Ring of Honor. But I just feel like he's like the prototypical guy that WWE looks for. Physique aside, I mean, his physique is fine. He's not this big jacked up dude that they might kind of look at and go, oh, you know, we got something in this guy. He's not really a big guy. And if anything, maybe that would work against him. Aside from the size, though, he's got a good look. He's a great wrestler. He's very articulate, very well-spoken. He carries himself well. He is a company guy. I don't know why he isn't already under WWE a developmental deal. I don't know why he's not on the main roster. I could say that about most of the guys in NXT right now. But I predict that next year he will be under a WWE developmental deal, and it'll be well-deserved. I look forward to seeing him there. Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks will all be called up from NXT to the main roster at some point during the year. Speaking of Sami Zayn, I think he's going to have an incredible series of matches once he does get called up with Cesaro that are intended not to elevate Cesaro, unfortunately, but more to elevate Zayn. I think Triple H, I think the people there know the kind of chemistry that Sami Zayn and Cesaro have. And if they're not doing anything with Cesaro, and I'd love to sit here and predict that next year, you know, he'll be out of the doghouse and it's going to be his year. I don't feel it. I really don't. I hope they start to give him a push. I just don't see Cesaro getting to the level that he really deserves to be at in that company. I really do think his future is I don't know, back in Ring of Honor or New Japan. I really think that in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is really going through a boom period of their own right now, he would fit in with that style perfectly. And they've got a whole bunch of foreigners that are on that roster, AJ Styles, chief among them, who are doing very well. I think Cesaro, if and when he ends up over there, is going to do very well for himself. So I don't see this as being really more about getting Cesaro over. I see this as, okay, these two guys, not just on the indies, but even in NXT, had an incredible series of matches. If the goal is to get Sami Zayn over once he gets called up, I can't think of a better person on that roster right now that they could sacrifice and they can use in that role to make Sami look good than Cesaro. So I say they go back to that well, and we'll probably end up with another incredible series of matches between the two of those guys. I also think, and I'll say it again, I said this before, Finn Balor, okay, Prince Devitt, he's going to be huge. By WrestleMania 32, not next year, but the year after, maybe not in the main event, but he'll be in a big match on that show, let's put it that way. I think he's going to be one of those top guys in the next 2 or 3 years, and I think he finally gets that call up next year, and his ascent will begin at that point. Speaking of NXT, I predict that NXT is going to begin live touring outside of Florida next year. I don't know. I'm surprised it hasn't already happened. I think next year is the year it happens. They'll expand beyond just Florida. And look, I know they have house shows in the Florida area where they're barely drawing 200 people. I don't really know how hard they promote those shows. And the other key is they don't have television in Florida. So you might say, well, what sense does that make if you're going to start running NXT shows, let's say, in Georgia, or New York, or North Carolina? You know, how can you expect to draw more fans? I think that we're going to see the beginning of that, whether it's NXT exclusive or incorporating more NXT matches into the existing WWE house shows. I do think that NXT is going to expand its borders, so to speak, beyond just Florida, and that'll be the first, or I should say the next big step in making it a legit third brand. I think that's the goal that Triple H has for it. It's more than just developmental, and I think we're going to see that next year. The WWE Network, launched this year, has not had a great year. Nowhere close to a million subscribers, which is what they had, I think, promised the investors they would be at by the time this year was over. Not even close. I predict the WWE Network, it will continue to grow, but slowly. And by this time next year, okay, 12 months from now in December 2015, it will still be under 1.1 million monthly subscribers is my prediction for the network. And that's including the UK. They have not yet launched in the UK. That's coming up hopefully in January. We don't yet know what form it will take. It could be like in Canada where it's more of a normal, regular cable channel and not this over-the-top model that we have here in the States. So we don't know what form it's going to take in the UK, but I mean, I would think a year from now it will have already been launched for many, many months in the UK, and even including the UK, I still predict that overall, the total number of monthly subscribers a year from now, I'd like to think it will be over a million. I'll tell you what, it may not even be over a million, but I'm going to say it will absolutely not be over 1.1 million. It will be under that number, and that is far below where they need to be, I think, to break even on this network. So, not good news. Not good news for the network. And lastly here, speaking of the UK, one final prediction. I believe that WWE will make the announcement next year of a major event, finally, coming to the UK in 2016. It'll be a pay-per-view. I'm thinking SummerSlam. They're overdue for a big show overseas, and for all the reasons they may have had not to do it, the expense, the different time zone, you know, pay-per-view now is going away. They are slowly but surely killing pay-per-view, It's on life support. By next year, it'll be dead. They're hoping that that means that people will sign up for the network. It doesn't look like that's happening, so I don't really know what's going to happen there. You would think as people shift away from pay-per-view, they'll spend the $9.99 on the network, and that's just not happening. Instead, what's happening is people just are not buying the pay-per-views, and they're not seeing them at all because the numbers don't match up. Those people are not subscribing to the network, and that's not good. But the point is, with pay-per-view going away and everything now being on the network, they're free to do whatever they want. I mean, they could have a show tomorrow if they wanted to in the UK and have it as a live network special. And yeah, it'll cost them some money, but it's your own network. You can afford to, even as an experiment, go to the UK, go to Australia, and do something like that. And not just have, like they used to have, the UK-only pay-per-views, One Night Only, Capital Carnage, Mayhem in Manchester. I'm talking about a legit big-time pay-per-view, not WrestleMania. I don't see that happening. But I think SummerSlam. You could absolutely do SummerSlam in the UK, you know, the first time since 1992, and make it a big deal. They're already locked in for Madison Square Garden next year, but I predict they'll make the announcement for 2016 that a big pay-per-view, probably SummerSlam, will be coming to the UK. That is my prediction. And why not? Why not? They're overdue for one. I think it'll make it feel special. I mean, look, here's the thing about these pay-per-views, okay? And a lot of you guys have said this to me, and I agree with you 100%. The most important thing is that they get their shit together with their storylines, okay, and creative. All this other stuff really is trivial compared to that, okay? If they have great creative and we're into the product and it's fun and it's exciting, who gives a fuck what color the ropes are, what the stage looks like? Okay, all of that stuff becomes trivial, but it does matter. To some degree, it does matter. It can help make the show feel fresher. One thing they've gotten away from is giving their pay-per-view events a special feel. The set is the exact same set they use for Raw and SmackDown. It looks no different. There's no props. There's no nothing. It just looks boring. There is nothing to differentiate, let's say, SummerSlam from Monday Night Raw, or to differentiate SummerSlam from Extreme Rules. And I think at least for some of the bigger pay-per-views during the year, like the Royal Rumble, like SummerSlam, they already have a big set for WrestleMania. We could put that on the side. What about all these other shows? Shouldn't they look different? Shouldn't they have a special feel to them? Shouldn't you change things up a little bit for it? I think by going to the UK or going overseas and having a special show, that would go a long way to making the show feel different. Hey, this is not just another SummerSlam. This is not just another pay-per-view. This is a big deal. And I think to the fans in the UK, it would be a big deal. I can't tell you how many emails I've gotten from people asking me, how come they don't come here for a show? How come they don't come here? I don't know. Ask them. I'm with you. You know, I feel for you guys. I hope they do it, and I think they will. With this network, I think it makes it a lot more likely, and I think we're going to get that big announcement next year. So those are my predictions for WWE in 2015. Some are not really, I'm not taking a big leap on some of them, and some of them I am, like saying that Punk will not fight in UFC. I may look bad for predicting that a year from now, but we'll see. Raw this past Monday night was the annual Christmas show, this one from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where Ho-Ho Hogan got his start. It was part of the AWA wrestling for Vern Gagne. Hogan was there. It was Ho-Ho Hogan's night of Christmas rematches. Would he deliver a stocking full of coal to us for Christmas? I guess let's find out. We had another long opening segment full of talking, which is now becoming a Raw tradition, to set up the first match, which was a rematch between John Cena and Seth Rollins. Ho-Ho Hogan was also out there with more hair on his head than he's had his entire life. Cena and Rollins, they had a good match, not as good as their match at TLC or the cage match. I thought this was maybe third on that list, but you know, they work well together. It was still a good match. Cena overcame the odds because that's what he does. Delivered a double AA to Noble and Mercury. Still managed to beat Rollins with an AA of his own. I know he won the cage match the week before, Seth Rollins did, but between the loss to Cena at TLC, the loss on SmackDown to Dolph Ziggler, now the clean loss to John Cena again, I'm thinking we may be getting a Rollins cash in a hell of a lot earlier than WrestleMania. Probably at the Royal Rumble. I guess that's kind of their mode of thinking. That's their mentality. You can beat the guy over and over again. It's okay to do that if the plan is for him to get the title. They've done this with countless other people that have won that Money in the Bank briefcase. I don't agree with it, but that's their formula. There was no good reason for Rollins to lose here other than let's give Cena his win back. And I know that, you know, John Cena is the one challenging Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble for the championship. I get that. But you know what? Then don't book this match. How about that? Don't put these two guys in the ring anyway because they've already had a whole bunch of matches. If you don't want to beat John Cena, don't put him in the ring with Seth Rollins. How's that for an idea? Jerry Lawler had a senior moment during the match when he said, with a straight face, and you heard it at the top of the podcast, we don't see John Cena go to the top very often. When Cena went up for his top rope leg drop, which he does in almost every single match that he's in for years. And it was at that moment, you know, I said, I really wish I could use the SAP button on my TV to get Japanese commentary the way that you can for the New Japan pay-per-view next week. I don't understand a fucking thing that they're saying in Japanese, but it would still be so much better than the announcing on this show. At least those guys actually pay attention to what's happening on their own shows. These guys clearly do not. Lawler does not give a fuck. He is there to collect the paycheck. He has his moments. I still feel like Lawler can be good. Some people are just brutal. Jerry Lawler sucks. He should die. Get him off commentary. He's no good. I think Michael Cole, when he can be, when he's allowed to be, is a very good announcer. I feel like Jerry Lawler, in there somewhere, still is a good announcer. I mean, he was always better as a heel, as the heel foil to JR and Vince McMahon in the late 90s. And I know it's just a different time. You can't make those kind of jokes anymore. You know, he also, I think, is handcuffed to a large degree. I have to believe that in there somewhere, as good of a promo as Jerry Lawler still is, Jerry Lawler is one of the greatest promo guys in the history of wrestling. I mean, you make a top 10 list of best promo guys ever from anywhere, any promotion. If Lawler isn't number one, he's got to be in that top five, top three. I mean, he's that good. And he'll still wrestle. You know, he does independent shows. Lawler is still a good promo. Now, being a good promo and being a good announcer are not exactly the same thing, but I have to believe that somewhere deep in there, deep in that doughboy gut of his, that he has got the ability still to be a good announcer. He just isn't. It just feels like he doesn't pay any attention to what's going on. He parrots whatever they want him to say. His jokes are not funny. He's got that high pitch, hee-hee! You know, it's just, it's so annoying. And it just feels like there's nothing redeeming about the guy anymore. And when he makes stupid comments like that, it makes you wonder, like, is he making that comment on his own because he feels like that's what Vince McMahon wants to hear? Is he saying that because he's got Vince saying, hey, Jerry, you know, mention that he doesn't go to the top very often? Like, I said this last week. I made the comment that the announcing in WWE right now with the Three Stooges is as bad as it's ever been. I cannot remember a period where the announcing was consistently this bad. But I would love to know who's to blame for that. I can't really blame Cole and Lawler and JBL too much. You can blame them, but you can't blame them too much because I just don't know for sure if it's entirely their fault. It cannot be entirely their fault. That doesn't mean that the announcing is any better. It sucks. And Lawler is a big part of why. Fandango beat Jack Swagger. Clean with the leg drop off the top rope. Oh, to see where Swagger was just 4 months ago compared to now. How the mighty have fallen. At this point, they announced a Luke Harper versus Dolph Ziggler rematch for the Intercontinental title later in the show, which, coupled with the John Cena-Seth Rollins match and the Dean Ambrose-Bray Wyatt street fight main event, you know, I thought that actually made for some pretty big matches. It kind of caught me off guard. I was not expecting them to go all out with some... And again, I know they're rematches, but those are still some of the biggest matches they can do right now. On the Christmas show, I wasn't expecting that. And for having all of those matches on one show, you know, if they didn't first finalize their scripts 5 minutes before they go on the air every single week, might have been a good idea to advertise at least one of those three matches the week before. But, you know, I guess that's old school wrestling. That's what Vince's dad did. He doesn't like that. He hates that. Adam Rose lost to R-Truth very quickly with a roll-up. Then Adam Rose snapped. He beat the shit out of the bunny, who was wearing a neck brace to sell the tombstones that he took from Kane the week before. He better be careful, Adam Rose. He keeps this up, I may become an Adam Rose fan. Roman Reigns and The Big Show. That's another match. I thought maybe they would hold off until the Royal Rumble, but they did the first of what I'm sure is not the last match. I'm sure the first of many on this show. The match was no good. Some fans chanted Daniel Bryan. Some fans chanted for some other wrestler named Boring. He seems to be quite popular these days. Reigns did his jumping drop kick to Big Show on the apron. He delivered a Superman punch to him on the outside, knocked Big Show flying over the announce desk to the floor. Reigns climbed back into the ring in time to beat the count, won the match by countout. A lame finish, and Big Show just got right back up and he walked out. He was angry and he walked off. He stormed off. So this obviously is setting up for a rematch, or three, or four. This is, after all, WWE. Stone Cold Natalya beat Brie Bella in 3:16. It was perfect. The stopwatch was 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Beat her by pinfall, then posed with Nikki's Divas title after the match. So it appears that Natalya is next in line for a title shot. AJ Lee is out. I don't know for how long. She may have an injury. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but I don't know. From what I read, this is not a sign that she's leaving anything to do with CM Punk. Whatever the issue is, she's going to be gone for a while, and then the expectation is that she will be back. But we haven't seen, I think, or heard from AJ since she got sprayed in the eyes with hairspray at TLC, so she seems to be out of the picture right now. For some reason, Tyson Kidd was outside the ring for this match wearing Nikki Bella's baseball hat. Probably some Total Divas nonsense that'll be forgotten in 2 weeks. By the way, that reminds me. I read this week that the reason, because I've been asking about this for weeks, what the fuck is going on with the Bella Twins? I was not a fan of the Bella Twins storyline, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I am devastated we didn't get a proper conclusion to this epic, as in epically bad, rivalry between the two of them, but they did this whole deal where the sisters were against each other, and Nikki hated her sister, I wish you died in the womb, and then Brie became her sister's slave for a month, and then all of a sudden they were back together 1 week without any expectation. And Brie is smiling again, and then she does that promo at TLC, well, you know, blood is thicker than water. That's the best they could come up with. Blood is thicker than water. It's horseshit. And I've been asking, like, what's going on here? I figured there was some kind of swerve that was coming where Brie was being awfully nice to her sister, but she was going to turn on her, cost her the title, challenge her for the title. But no, she actually helped AJ beat, or rather she helped Nikki, I should say, beat AJ at the pay-per-view, and it seems like they're back together and everything's all hunky-dory again. Well, I read this week that the reason the Bella Twins storyline makes no sense is because it was only done at the request of the producers of the show Total Divas, because that was going to be their big storyline this past season on the show. And then they ended up changing their minds. They pulled a Vince McMahon, and the producers of the show changed their minds, and they went with a different story instead. So that's why we're left with such a lame conclusion on WWE's shows. The whole, like I said, blood is thicker than water cop-out. It's because the producers of the show changed their mind, and apparently they're a slave to whatever the hell E! Television wants. So yeah, fuck Total Divas. Gold and Stardust against the Matadors and Torito, who is dressed up like a reindeer. The less said about this, the better. This sucked. Dolph Ziggler retained his Intercontinental title over Luke Harper in a damn good match, the best thing on the entire show. And for anybody listening to this right now who has not watched Raw, who does not watch Raw at all, and relies strictly on this show for the reviews, and I know there's a lot of you guys out there, if I had to make one more comment about the year in review for WWE 2014, more than any of the other years, I've done the show now over 7 years, this was the year I got the most correspondence, tweets, emails, Facebook messages from you guys telling me that you've given up, you no longer watch Raw, you can't sit through it, you can't tolerate it, you rely on this show for my thoughts and for my reviews, and then you kind of maybe go back and cherry pick what to watch. And that's kind of sad, I guess. I'm grateful that you listen to my show. It's kind of sad that it's gotten to that point. If I had to recommend one thing on this 3-hour show for you to go back and watch, and John Cena and Seth Rollins, they had a good match. There was nothing spectacular about it. The main event also was good, but not overly spectacular. This is the match I would pick. Go back and watch this match. This was very good. I mean, it couldn't top the ladder match where they killed each other at the pay-per-view, but it came pretty close. They stole the show. Once again, Ziggler sold for practically the entire match, because that's what he does. Harper went for, this is the best spot of the match, Harper went for his spinning lariat at one point, but Dolph Ziggler caught him with a wicked super kick right to the jaw. Instead of going down, Harper just spun around anyway like it had no effect on him and destroyed Dolph with a clothesline. Just an awesome near fall. That's like a Ring of Honor spot right there, where they just beat each other and beat each other, don't sell the moves, hit a big move, constant kickouts, but it worked here. Ziggler ended up hitting two super kicks, channeling his inner Young Buck, and then nailed the zigzag for the pin. After the match, they did something they very rarely do. They gave Dolph some promo time. They actually came up with a good use for Jerry Lawler for once on this show. They had him go into the ring. He was wearing the ugliest Christmas sweater that you'll ever see, which is probably still a step above some of the t-shirts that he wears week to week. He got in the ring to interview the man who gave him a heart attack that he loves to talk about so much. He didn't bring that up, but he did get in the ring to interview Dolph. Dolph thanked the fans, said 2015 will be his year. And then the announcers on commentary, they really pushed this narrative of, will Dolph Ziggler become the man in 2015? They were pushing it hard enough that it really made you think they have a long-term plan for the guy. And that's when I burst into laughter and had to remind myself that this is, after all, WWE we're talking about here. What's likely going on here, if I had to make another prediction, if I had to guess what the hell this is all about, and I don't know this for a fact, but it's smart, if I'm right, is that they're making an effort to create more than just one or two obvious choices to win the Royal Rumble this year. You know, if they build up Dolph Ziggler strong over the next 6 weeks, and they keep pushing this narrative of 2015 might be his year, he's got the fan support, he's going out there every night, he's stealing the show, this is going to be a big year for Dolph Ziggler. You know, the more they keep doing that, when it comes time for the Rumble, if it comes down to, let's say, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, and maybe someone like a Bray Wyatt, you may think Roman Reigns is winning, because that's been the plan all along, so obviously Roman's going to win, but you know what? There may be some doubt there. Well, maybe they're going to go with Ambrose, because he's been losing so much, or maybe they're actually going to go with Dolph Ziggler, because he's been on a hot streak, and the fans are into this guy, and they've been talking for the last 6 weeks about what a big year it's going to be for him. You know, if that's what they're doing here, if there really is no long-term big push goal for the guy, then shame on them, because there really should be. But if that's what they're doing, I think it's smart. It is a smart move on their part. You want to have more than just one or two obvious choices to win the Rumble. If you got a solid three, four, five different guys that the fans think, huh, it could be any one of these guys, that's smart business. That's the way you really build up a Royal Rumble match. Part of me would like to think they finally pulled their head out of their ass and they see what they have with this guy. I'm still predicting that at some point next year he will be WWE champion, however brief his run may be. But I said it before and I'll say it again, I don't think that he'll ever be the guy in WWE. But that doesn't mean you can't elevate him enough to where he can be a believable main event guy. There is no reason for Dolph Ziggler not to be in main events in WWE. The guy goes out there, he steals the show, he's a great performer, the fans are into him. You can have a guy as a main eventer and not have him as the face of the company. Why Ziggler is not already in that role, I have no idea. So I'm optimistic he'll get to that role, he'll be in that spot at some point, but he won't ever be the guy in WWE. It's just not going to happen. Piper's Pit, Rowdy Roddy Piper in the house to interview, Rana and Lusev. No, he was there to interview Lana, and I think he called him Rusev when he introduced him. Other than that, Hot Rod looked pretty good out there. This all culminated, you know, because Rusev started to threaten Piper, and Piper said, well, I got a Christmas gift for you, and I put a bow on it. And out came Ryback wearing a giant bow that he ripped off. He stormed down to the ring. He met Rusev outside, like two big bulls. He just bowled over Rusev. And the fans were into this. The fans were going crazy for Ryback. They were chanting his name. They did the Feed Me More. It was really loud. It was really good, I got to say, to see the big guy get that kind of love in Minneapolis. Crowd was just big time into him. Way more into Ryback than they were for Roman Reigns, which was interesting. It's not like this was Ryback's hometown, like when he was in Vegas a few months ago and got that big response that kind of led to this resurgence in his career. This was, I don't know, it was Minneapolis, just a random city. And I don't know, at least on this show, they were a hell of a lot more into Ryback than they were into Roman Reigns. Naomi, Emma, and Alicia Fox beat Paige, Summer Rae, and Cameron in a Santa's Helper match. 4 minutes, 17 seconds was the time on the stopwatch. Alicia nailed her wacky new finish. I can't even describe what it is. It looked cool. She beat Summer Rae with it for the pin. They were all dressed up in their Christmas outfits, although Paige was decked out in all black. She was the only person that anybody cared about in this match. They chanted Paige's name over and over again. It's too bad her team lost. Also, poor Emma. I always love to see Emma on Raw, but it's also kind of depressing. Nobody gives a shit about her. There wasn't one person in that building who gave a shit about Emma. Except Paige, probably, who was opposite on the other side of the ring because they're best friends. It's a shame. And I blame... that's all on WWE. I mean, you cannot be an Emma fan because you think the gimmick and the dancing and the bubbles and all that is stupid. Has she even done the bubbles on the main roster like she did in NXT? I don't even know. But I guarantee you, had they put an effort into pushing this girl, she'd have her fans by now. Some people would care about her. Some people would take her seriously as a wrestler if they actually let her go out there and show what she can do. And maybe she is wrestling matches on Superstars. Maybe she is wrestling matches on Main Event. I said it last week. Who gives a shit? Who cares? If the matches on Main Event and the matches on Superstars are not leading to anything, if they're not leading to her having matches like that on Raw and SmackDown, why should I care? I don't have time to sit and watch Main Event and Superstars every fucking week. I have 3 hours of this show. I barely catch SmackDown sometimes. I got NXT, which is better than all of them. I got Impact. I got Lucha Underground. I mean, everybody has their limit. I am beyond my limit. I sit through 3 hours of this on Monday night. I don't want to hear from people, well, you really should watch Main Event, Solid Monster. You're missing the really good matches on Main Event. Why the fuck should I have to watch Main Event to get the good matches? What the fuck am I sitting through 3 hours of this stuff for on Mondays? If you had great matches on Raw like that on every Monday and great matches on Main Event, then fine. Then I have an option. If I want more great wrestling, I'll watch Main Event. I actually take offense to that. I take offense to the fact that I have people telling, and I'm not blaming you guys, I'm just saying, I take offense that I have people telling me that I'm missing out on some really great stuff on these meaningless shows when I have to sit through 3 hours of this on Monday night, and it's hit or miss. Most weeks, it's a miss. Why is that? Why wouldn't you put your best foot forward on Raw? I mean, I think back to the way it was back in the day when we had Sunday Night Heat and Metal and Jacked, and you had some great matches on those shows too. Velocity was another one. But Velocity came at a time, I think, when SmackDown was like the A show. SmackDown went through this period like when Heyman was writing, you know, booking the show, whatever. I'm thinking like 2002, 2003. You know, Velocity was a show where you could find some really great matches. And you would have a guy like a Bryan Danielson, a Samoa Joe that they would bring in and have matches on that show. But it wasn't as though, oh, all the good stuff is on Velocity and SmackDown is shit. No, SmackDown was the shit. SmackDown was fucking awesome back then. It just so happened that on those lesser shows, they gave you more great matches with, you know, guys that were in the mid-card. You wouldn't really see them getting that much television time on like Raw or SmackDown. Now it's like, all of a sudden, if you want really great wrestling and you want to see what makes the WWE and some of these guys so great, you have to suffer through... I suffer in that I already watch enough WWE. Why do I have to take up more of my time just to get to the good stuff? You know what I mean? I can't be the only one who feels that way. That offends me. That offends me as a fan. It shouldn't be that way. I shouldn't have to watch Main Event to see a good Emma match. Push the fucking girl on Raw. Give her a shot. Otherwise, what the fuck do you even have her under contract for? Why is she signed to a contract? You know how many people they have in NXT right now who should be on the main roster right now? They only have a finite number of spots. Why they bring some of these people up and then they don't do anything with them? You've got so many guys banging down that door just dying for a chance to come up to the main roster. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Summer Rae. Summer Rae is another one who was in this match. Summer Rae, you almost forget, she's really good. If you never watched NXT, you would never know. But you never see her on the main shows anymore. She may be another one, for all I know, who's on Superstars and Main Event. I wouldn't know because very rarely do I have the time to watch those shows. So it's no wonder that when they put these women in these meaningless matches on Raw, nobody reacts. Nobody cares. Because you haven't given them a reason to care. And the ones I feel badly for the most are the Summer Rays and the Emmas, who you gotta know, it's just killing them to go out there to crickets. And it's not their fault. Main event was a miracle on 34th Street fight between Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt. I thought this was a good brawl, maybe even better than their TLC match in some ways, because at least here they got creative with all the festive weapons around ringside. I think by the time Ambrose and Wyatt went out there for that main event on the pay-per-view, we had seen so many tables and so many ladders and so many chairs. Who could care at that point? Here we had candy cane kendo sticks and Christmas trees all around ringside, and it was different. The problem is, Dean Ambrose lost. Again. And I know he won at Tribute to the Troops. Apparently the two had a match. I think it was a boot camp match. I didn't see it. But here's the problem with this. At TLC, Ambrose lost because a TV, he didn't think to unplug, blew up in his face, which made him look like an idiot. Here, he lost after he got thrown eyeball first into a giant candy cane kendo stick that he himself set up flat on top of one of the turnbuckles in the corner. Yet again, looking like an idiot. So, as a fan, I'm left to think that Dean Ambrose is in fact a moron who gets exactly what he deserves. They call him the lunatic fringe, right? He's crazy. He's unstable. That makes him an idiot. And after the match, he got his revenge on Bray Wyatt. He dove off the top for an elbow through a table outside on the floor, showing no ill effects, by the way, of going eyeball first into that stick, which is exactly why he lost the match. He lost the match not on some high-impact move. He lost the match because, my God, I mean, he got stuck right in the eye with this stick. I mean, he could be blind. Nope. He wasn't even touching his eye, rubbing his eye, you know, twitching, blinking. Nope. No ill effects whatsoever. You would never know anything was wrong. So what was the point? I can go back to the whole trachea thing on SmackDown. I don't want to rehash that whole thing again. You know, in a case like this, I think that's another problem they have. They do these little injury angles sometimes, right? Or they have like that's a big deal. You know, the stick goes into somebody's eye. You know, back in the day, Ambrose, he'd be on TV maybe the next week, but he'd have an eye patch on. He'd be selling an eye injury. Why? You think Dean Ambrose is going to show up on television next week wearing an eye patch? Fuck no. Of course not, because it doesn't matter. So who cares? Who cares? It's a good match, though. If you want to go back and see a nice, fun brawl with fancy, festive weapons, again, if I had one match to recommend on this show, it would be the Harper-Ziggler match, but the main event wasn't bad. Edge and Christian are the guest hosts this upcoming Monday for Raw, so a 20-minute-long opening segment on this show may not be so bad for a change. NXT, I'm not even going to play the music, really. There was no new show this week. For the most part, it was a 2014 Best Of recap show. But they did air a rematch for the NXT Women's title with Charlotte and Sasha Banks. Ric Flair came out to introduce his daughter, and he was in her corner for the match. Another really good match between these two. It's worth it to, if you've got the network subscription, just log in, skip all the other stuff. I mean, it wasn't a bad show. I sat through the whole thing. It was mostly recaps, for example, of the awesome main event, maybe the match of the year in WWE with Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn from the Our Evolution special. They had a video package on Adrian Neville from, I guess, several months ago. WWE did a tour, and he was able to go back to his hometown in England, in Newcastle. And they had cameras following him. He went back home to surprise his mom, and he was on the show. He was wearing a Newcastle jersey. I had never seen that before. So that was a cool video package. Everything else, though, I think I had pretty much seen. But this match is what you want to fast forward and check out. It was awesome. Sasha nailed a backcracker float over into the crossface, what she calls the bank statement. Charlotte got to the ropes to force the break. Sasha later nailed a superplex off the top rope. Unlike a takeover, if you remember, she went for a superplex at takeover. It got reversed, and that's when Charlotte turned it into a top rope natural selection cutter for the win. Here, Sasha nailed the superplex for a near fall. Charlotte went for a figure four, but Sasha grabbed her hair, rolled her up for another near fall, but Charlotte got it on anyway, and she bridged up for the figure eight. And I just made the comment, I think, on last week's show when I was talking about all these women coming out of NXT that are being trained by Sara Del Rey, knowing all these different submission holds, and how you could throw Charlotte on that list too because of that figure eight move. We haven't seen her use it in a while. Well, there it was on the show. It's a figure four leg lock. She bridges up, I guess, to apply more pressure. And that got Sasha Banks to tap out for the win. So another big win for Charlotte, who celebrated with her dad as they went off the air. Really, really good match. These two women work tremendously well. They're going to be on the main roster soon enough. And I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I went on my little rant before. I want to see these women make more money. They're not making any money on NXT. I mean, at the end of the day, when, you know, it comes to, should we all hope that these people never leave NXT and don't go to the main roster, and going to the main roster is a demotion? We could joke about it. In a perfect world, I really don't want to see this crew that they have right now on NXT broken up. I want to see it only get stronger. I would love to see NXT as a legit third brand, and I think that is the direction they're going in. But the reality is, these guys are going to get called up to the main roster. You know, Sami Zayn, he's been in developmental for 2 years. That's criminal. He should have been on the main roster a long time ago, and he will be. Adrian Neville, Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, all these guys. But when you look at the women especially, as a fan, selfishly, I don't want to see it. Because I don't have any faith at all whatsoever that Vince McMahon and his merry band of writers up there are going to do anything with most of these women. I would think that Charlotte would be immune to that because she's that good and she's Ric Flair's daughter, so she's probably going to get chances maybe that other women might not. But then again, look at the way they booked Charlotte in her one Raw appearance. Look at the way they booked her on that show to lose in 3 minutes to Natalya a few days before she had her big match with Sasha Banks. So I don't have a good feeling about what's gonna happen with these women when they do get called up. That's just the selfish aspect with me. I want to see them become bigger stars and make more money because in NXT there's no money to be made. And it's a business. You want to make as much money as you can, sell t-shirts, all that kind of stuff. So I wish them the best, but you know, when I watch matches like this, it actually kind of makes me sad because I know that we're not going to get matches like this once they get called up. I mentioned Adrian Neville. I have to talk about this. It was PW Insider, Mike Johnson, who first had... It was a very small note in a news update earlier in the week that Adrian Neville... And I've heard rumors about this for a while, that Neville was probably going to be the next one after the Ascension called up. He also has been kind of just existing in developmental for so long that his call-up is overdue. And they were batting around potential gimmick ideas for him, because everybody's got to have a gimmick when they get called up. And, you know, I guess he's small, he's got big floppy ears, so we have to come up with a character for him. And all Mike Johnson said was it was going to be Mighty Mouse-esque. He didn't actually say they were going to put Adrian Neville in a fucking Mighty Mouse costume, which I think is what most people ran with. That's not how I read it. That's not how it was written. Mighty Mouse-esque. The question is, what does that mean? That can mean any number of things. The old Mighty Mouse character, he was small but strong. He can fucking lift heavy shit even though he was tiny. So if it's a gimmick where he is small but powerful, that's not the worst idea in the world. If, however, the idea is for him to have a fucking cape and be dressed like a superhero, and they really just get too corny with it, or it's meant for comedy, that would not be good. That would not be good at all. And I assume this is the direction they're going in, because in the Observer newsletter this week, Dave Meltzer had a very similar note. I guess he must have heard the same thing, that whatever they're going for something that is based on Mighty Mouse. They're talking about maybe putting a mask on him. Now, I'm not going to judge this until I see it. We haven't even seen the vignettes with this guy first. Right now, all of this, it sounds like, is in the discussion stages. They're trying to come up with ideas. I would hope and I would think that Neville is involved in some way in the process here. Maybe they're getting his input on this. The idea of putting a mask on Adrian Neville is not something that excites me. I don't know why you would do that. I look at a guy like Adrian Neville. I think there's some appeal there. I don't think he's a bad-looking dude. I mean, yeah, he's got the big ears and all that, but you know, when he's out there doing his thing, the guy is chiseled. He's small, but he's chiseled. He's jacked. You know, he's got a good look. I don't know why you would want to put a mask on him. The one benefit that there might be to that, his ears are very big. And when I watched a replay of the TakeOver, the last TakeOver show, because I wanted somebody who's a casual fan to watch that main event, and they loved it. But he and his wife made the same comment when they looked at him. They go, man, his ears are big. And unfortunately, whether you and I like it or not, when Neville does come up to that main roster, and he is in front of a more casual audience, people are going to look at him, and they're going to make judgments. Like, hey, this guy's small, or hey, this guy's got big floppy ears. So the idea of putting a mask on him that would push the ears back, you wouldn't notice his ears. Actually, you might. I guess it depends on the kind of mask it is. Your ears could poke through. That might not be the worst thing in the world. I wouldn't put a mask on the guy. You know, he's not an ugly dude, I don't think. So why would you put a mask on him? It's like all those years that Alberto Del Rio wore a mask in Mexico, and then the mask came off, and it was like a whole other person. This guy, you know, he had the wink that he would do, and all of his facial expressions. It was awesome. You know, that was one of the best things about the Del Rio character. Look at Sami Zayn. How many years that he wore a mask, or as legend would have it, some guy named El Generico, who looked an awful lot like Sami Zayn, used to wear a mask, and they took the mask off of him, pissed everybody off. Oh, here we go, WWE, they're taking the mask off, they're taking his character away from him. Well, guess what? It worked out so much better for him, because he's another guy who tells stories with his face, and as a talker, and El Generico, I don't think, would ever talk. Again, if rumors are to be believed, El Generico, Sami Zayn, they could be one and the same. I don't know. Last I heard, El Generico went off to go work with kids at an orphanage or something. But, you know, he didn't talk. Sami Zayn, one of the best features about his character, besides his wrestling, is his talking. I think Sami Zayn, what I love about his talking, even if it's scripted, and I don't know if it is, I don't know how much is scripted in NXT. We haven't seen him on the main roster yet, where fucking everything is scripted. But you have to think some of it is, and when I hear a Sami Zayn promo, for the most part, it doesn't sound rehearsed and scripted and fake and phony to me. So if he is reading stuff, he's doing it in a way where you would never know. It just sounds natural coming from him. I think that's one of the strong things about his promos when I listen to him. Not everybody can do that. You know, Adrian Neville was out there last week on NXT cutting a promo on Kevin Owens, and it was not a great promo. It sounded at points like he was saying stuff that he would never say. You know, it just kind of sounded forced and phony to me. I think that's one of the strong suits about Sami Zayn, and I'm getting off point here, but the point is, he wore a mask, they took the mask off of him, and it's done wonders for his career. I think putting a mask on Neville, I don't know that will do him any favors, except maybe on the ear thing for the casual audience, but who knows? I'm going to keep an open mind. We don't know anything about what the character is actually going to look like yet, so how can we sit here and bash it and judge it? But I will admit, you know, that's two different sources now, throwing the Mighty Mouse name out there. That has me very leery. I'm somewhat worried, but I'm waiting. I'm waiting and keeping an open mind to see exactly what the character may look like. But I'm like a lot of you guys. Some guys may benefit from having a character. There may be guys in NXT who really aren't that good, and having a gimmick or a character may actually make... They may be better off for it. When I look at the core group of guys down there, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, and Neville, these are guys that don't need a fucking character. They don't need a fucking gimmick. They're good on their own. Here's what I find funny about the whole thing, and then we'll move on. And I said this on Twitter. What I find funny about this whole thing, that they're even going through the hassle. What character, what gimmick can we come up with for this guy? Whatever that final gimmick is, Mighty Mouse or not, okay? Make him fucking Swamp Thing. Whatever it is. I find it funny that the one time Adrian Neville appeared on Monday Night Raw was in that tag team match. Okay, it was him and Sami Zayn against Tyler Breeze and Tyson Kidd before one of the other TakeOver specials. They did a tag team match. And the crowd was kind of quiet as the match went on, largely because I think of Zayn and Neville. The crowd woke up. The crowd really woke up when Neville got in the ring. And he was flying around all over the place, doing all these kicks, and he was moving a mile a minute. And the fans started to come alive. And then he climbed to the top rope, and he hit the Red Arrow, which to me is still, at least in WWE, is the most spectacular finish of any wrestler anywhere in WWE. It's a beautiful thing to watch. I don't know how he does it, but it looks amazing. And everybody reacted to it. Even people who did not know Adrian Neville from a fucking stranger on the street, when they saw that, you saw people in the first like four rows with their mouths open, like, holy shit, that was incredible. This guy can get over on his own just based on his work. And that's what I find so funny about the whole thing. He was already on Raw one time, and guess what? He got over, not because he had a character, or a fucking cape, or a fucking mask, or he was a mouse out there with a piece of cheese. He was out there wrestling, doing the Red Arrow, and everybody was just floored. This guy, you know, he won that crowd over in just a few short minutes. And there was no fancy gimmick. So it just goes to show you that sometimes you overthink things too much. Keep it simple. Keep it simple, stupid. But I am going to keep an open mind. We'll see what the character looks like. Am I worried? Yes, but let's not jump off any rooftops, okay? Let's just wait and see what they have in mind. And then we can judge it. Then we can bash it or praise it or what have you. I don't want to do that until I know exactly what this character is. Time for the mailbag. You can email your questions to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. And if you've made a PayPal donation of $10 or more and you have a wrestling nickname that I've assigned to you, go ahead and include that in your email as well. This audio question, we have two of them, comes to us from Merlo Williams.
What's up, Solemonster? Merlo Williams here. After your ringing endorsement of Finn Balor after the TakeOver Our Evolution show, it got me thinking we need to do a little bit of fantasy booking. Let's say all the guys who were huge on the indies have been called up to the main roster and you've got to book a WrestleMania 4 or 5 years down the road. So with Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and Adrian Neville all being on our fantasy roster now, who would you book them against at WrestleMania on the current roster?
I would say of the guys that you mentioned, if I had to match them up with somebody on the current roster, I would say Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. I think that could be an incredible match. Hideo Itami and Daniel Bryan, which I think is still probably a dream match to a lot of people. Bryan, you know, he lifted the flying knee. He's commented that Kent is like his favorite wrestler, such a big influence on him. So I'd love to see an Itami-Bryan match inside of a WWE ring. Actually, I'd probably rather see it inside an NXT ring. But at a WrestleMania, I still think that could be a big match. Adrian Neville and, you know, I'm going to say Adrian Neville and Bray Wyatt. I was thinking about that. I was actually going back and forth between Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. I think either one of them would be great, but I think Wyatt will be a bigger name. And both guys are bigger physically than Adrian Neville. And I get the sense that Neville would probably work well with guys that are slightly bigger than him. So I think a Neville-Wyatt match might surprise a lot of people. I think Sami Zayn and Cesaro, I will maintain that. I mean, it could be a match that Zayn has right out of the gate, maybe when he debuts next year, that helps elevate him because Cesaro is way down here. So it's not as though I can see a Cesaro-Sami Zayn WrestleMania match next year, but if they actually did start pushing Cesaro and doing something with him and built him up and built up Sami Zayn, then 2, 3, 4 years down the line, I mean, imagine a pushed Cesaro one-on-one with Sami Zayn in a match at WrestleMania, they'd steal the show. I have no doubt about that in my mind. It wouldn't even be the main event, but I'd feel sorry for whoever was in the main event that night. I feel sorry for whoever had to follow those two guys. That'd be an incredible match at WrestleMania. And lastly, I'd go with Kevin Owens and John Cena. I'm sure people are hearing that going, uh-oh, why would you do that to poor Kevin Owens? Whatever the outcome is, I think Owens and Cena, Owens would bring an element of realism that is sorely lacking when it comes to John Cena feuds and John Cena matches. And I don't know. I've never seen them wrestle before. I don't think they ever have, but I get the sense that they might be able to go out there and have a damn good match and probably get a couple of really good matches out of it. Have like a lengthy program between the two of them. So that's what I would, that would be my WrestleMania card as of today if I had to match those guys up with current roster guys. We have another audio question. This one comes to us from Michael in Los Angeles.
Hey, Solemonster. It's Michael out in Los Angeles, California. And I was wondering if you knew of any of the rumors regarding Ring of Honor talents no longer being able to wrestle for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla out in California, and if you know if those rumors are in fact true. Second question was if you knew why Colt Cabana no longer wrestles for Ring of Honor. I've heard a couple things and read some different things online that Jim Cornette may have had something to do with Colt's relationship with Ring of Honor. Thanks.
I've heard those same rumors about ROH and PWG. I don't know if they're true or not. I think Kyle O'Reilly is the PWG champion right now, so my guess would be no, because he's in Ring of Honor, so how do you reconcile that? You know, it's like, how do you allow one guy to go back and forth between the two companies but not other guys, unless you know, he's not under contract, the same kind of contract with Ring of Honor. I don't know how all that works, but I believe Kyle O'Reilly is the PWG champion, so yeah, I don't think that there is any sort of ban that I'm aware of, but I just don't know for sure. Cabana has said that when Jim Cornette was working for ROH, he never liked Colt. You know, he said that Cornette would tell him that funny doesn't equal money and that sort of thing. And then later on, after Jim Cornette was gone from Ring of Honor, ROH reached out to Colt Cabana about re-signing with the company, and he claims that he turned them down. That's what he says. Because they'd gone too corporate under Sinclair, and he just didn't have any interest in working for a big corporation, which begs the question, you know, if WWE, let's pretend the CM Punk stuff recently had never happened. Because I remember reading that Colt Cabana was, like, down either at the Performance Center or in Stamford. I don't know if it was a tryout, maybe, as an announcer. I don't remember. But you mean to tell me that if WWE came calling and said, hey, listen, we want to sign you to a deal, whether it's as a wrestler or an announcer or something, that he would have turned them down? I find that hard to believe. And there is no bigger corporation in wrestling to work for than WWE these days. So I don't know about that, but that's what he's claimed in interviews before. You know, they're too big of a corporation. He doesn't want to deal with that. He wants to do his own thing. And from the looks of it, he's doing quite well on his own. You know, his podcast is doing well. He does a lot of indie dates and sells his own merchandise. And, you know, he's kind of created his own little empire for himself. If I'm him at this stage of the game, I'm not sure why I would want to give all that up. If he's doing as well as he seems to be, you know, why would you? So I think that's the whole deal with Colt and Ring of Honor. It did stem from the Jim Cornette era, and supposedly they went back to him to sign him to a deal, and he just wasn't interested, and that's kind of where they left things. Tom from Worcester, Massachusetts. I was watching Raw last week where John Cena and Seth Rollins had a steel cage match. What is the point of the cage match if the referee is in there to count the pin or the submission? Why are wrestlers like, in this example, Brock Lesnar, allowed to just walk into the cage and attack? This stipulation has boggled my mind for some time now. The only way a wrestler wins the match should be just to escape the cage. Why don't they do this easy fix? Here's the thing about cage matches. I remember answering a question about cage matches a while back and kind of the origins of the cage match. The traditional way of doing a steel cage match was the way that it's done now, where the cage would exist not so that you can just escape. The cage was usually the climax or the blow-off to a feud, and it would usually be a really bloody affair. You don't see blood in cage matches anymore, which kind of takes away from the whole idea, I think, of being trapped inside of a steel cage. But it was never really an issue of, oh, the first person to walk out the door wins. You put the cage over these two guys because it was the only way to contain this rivalry and maybe to keep other people out. Whereas now it's a joke. They still to this day in WWE talk about, well, the cage is there to, you know, keep out the Wyatt family or keep out this. And meanwhile, what happens? Every single time, people get in the cage anyway. So what's the fucking point? That's the thing that drives me nuts, that they still try to drive this narrative of the cage is there, the Hell in a Cell is there, nobody can get in, right? It cannot be penetrated. It happens every single time. Come up from under the ring, or they beat up the referee and they open the door. It's stupid. But the idea of escape the cage, I could be wrong about this, so don't quote me on it, but I want to say it really either started or became popularized when WWE had the blue bar cage in the 80s, and you had guys like Hogan and Bundy and Studd and those kind of guys having steel cage matches in WWE. That really is where the escape the cage thing came into play. You go back earlier than that, in other promotions in the 80s or the 70s, it really wasn't so much about, hey, who can escape first? It was pinfall or submission inside the cage. That's how it worked. That's how the old war games worked in WCW. You had two rings and two cages. It wasn't about who can escape. You trap those eight guys or 10 guys inside the two rings, this gigantic cage, and they just went at it. It was an all-out brawl, one fall to a finish inside the cage. That's really how steel cage matches are supposed to be. Now, as somebody in my case who grew up watching those old blue bar cage matches in WWE, I guess I probably like you in that I really like the escape the cage stipulation. To me, it creates for more drama in the match when one guy is trying to get out and the other guy grabs him and he's hanging from the cage or he's trying to go out the door. I mean, in my opinion, my favorite and one of the best steel cage matches I've ever seen, was the Bret Hart vs. Owen Hart cage match at SummerSlam in 1994, and that was not pinfall or submission inside the cage. You know, back then, it was only escape. And I just loved the hell out of that match, and I loved the sequence they did where at one point, Owen went for the door, he dove for the door, and then Bret Hart grabbed him by the leg and dragged him back into the middle of the ring, and then Bret dove for the door. And they went through this, like, another three or four times. And all the, you know, Owen trying to get out over the top, and I think Bret had him by the hair at one point, and Owen is dangling over the edge. That's what I grew up on. That's what I knew cage matches to be. That's my preferred method of steel cage match, but people shouldn't think that's how it always used to be, because that actually wasn't how it used to be. So at least that gives you some frame of reference there. Christian in New Jersey, is it hypocritical of WWE to not allow things like choking to make the product more kid-friendly when they routinely have street fights with guys hitting each other in the head with sticks and garbage cans? Absolutely. That is a great point. I agree 100% on that. You know, wrestling is inherently a violent sport or form of entertainment, whatever the hell you want to call it. That's what wrestling is. It's two guys going in the ring and beating the crap out of each other in a simulated fight. They're throwing punches, they're throwing kicks. Randy Orton used to punt guys in the head until they did away with that, although I think he did use the punt on Big Show, I think, last year. Maybe it was even earlier this year on a pay-per-view. You know, and then they have these street fights. We just saw one on Raw Monday night. The whole TLC pay-per-view was nothing but nonstop violence. Guys hitting each other with ladders, using steel steps, steel chairs, fucking candy cane kendo sticks, garbage can lids, anything they can get their hands on, but yet, well, you know, choking is not allowed. And I know why. It was after the Benoit stuff. That's why Daniel Bryan got fired, you know, for a few months back in 2010. They have this no choking policy, no blood. It's their company. They could do what they want. Is it hypocritical? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, wrestling is violent. You can't deny it. That's what it is. You can't hide from it. It's kind of silly, I think, to ban certain types of moves, unless it's a pile driver where you're doing it for the safety of the performers. But the idea that choking is banned, but you can have people on television hitting each other in the head with kendo sticks, that's more than hypocritical. Absolutely. Kelvin from Union City, New Jersey. I feel like Jack Swagger should be a main event guy, but WWE is turning him into a jobber again. Why do you think Swagger still hasn't hit his main event stride in WWE? Well, losing clean to Fandango doesn't help. I'd say that. But he hasn't hit his main event stride because he's not a main eventer. He's not main event material. I mean, I'll just say it. Jack Swagger is not a main event guy. Not everybody can be a main event level guy. Zack Ryder, as popular as he was never, ever going to be a main event level guy. Just wasn't going to happen because he wasn't. He wasn't a main event person. Swagger's big. He's an athletic dude. He's a good wrestler. But I think even with a big push, I don't think I could buy him as a top star. Now, does that have more to do with the fact that Swagger's now been around for 5, 6, 7 years? And when a guy has been around that long and you haven't really done anything with him, I don't want to say that he can't ever be rehabilitated, but it makes it a lot harder, all the start and stop pushes. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that has a lot to do with it. Maybe when he cashed in his Money in the Bank all those years ago on Chris Jericho and won the world title, had they pushed him as a big badass motherfucker, maybe by now people would look at him as a big badass motherfucker and he'd be a main event level guy. And I'd be wrong, but right now I can't see it. I just can't see it. I mean, I think he's too far gone to ever be taken seriously as a top-level guy. Now, as the feud with Rusev showed, you can get the crowd behind him. That doesn't mean you can't get the people to chant Jack Swagger's name and be all into him. That doesn't make you a main eventer, though. When he was over in the summertime, he wasn't a main eventer. He was over as a mid-card guy. I think that's about the best you can hope for him. And especially on promos, he's not a good promo at all. In fact, I'd say he's a terrible promo. And in WWE, that doesn't help your cause either. You got to know how to talk. That's part of the deal. You know, that's part of the package. Now, should he be higher on the card right now than he is, jobbing to Fandango on television? Absolutely. We saw during the Rusev feud that the crowd could get behind the guy. That's on WWE. They had something with him, finally, and they squandered it. Matt from Canterbury, UK. I have a question regarding Shawn Michaels' return in 2002. Was this planned? Was it a simple case of HBK returning to the NWO in a non-wrestler role and then his in-ring return coming about? Or was this planned from the start? I don't know if Sean covered this in his book or not because I didn't read his book, but my impression is that he came back as part of the NWO with no immediate plan for him to return to the ring. But then what happened is Kevin Nash, who was already out for many months, I think with like a torn tricep or some kind of arm injury, he came back that one time on Raw and immediately tore his quad, and he's been the butt of torn quad jokes ever since. So Nash came back, he tore his quad, and then the very next week on Raw, Vince came out. Remember, he came out to the NWO music, and he said, I hope you guys enjoyed that, because that's the last time you're ever going to hear that music on Monday Night Raw. And he disbanded the NWO, which Shawn Michaels had just come back a month earlier to join the NWO. Now it was gone. It was over. So I don't think the plan all along had been for Shawn Michaels versus Triple H at SummerSlam that year, because I think the idea had been for Shawn Michaels and Nash and the NWO to recruit Triple H into the NWO, not to feud with him. So no, I don't think that was the plan, but I don't know that for sure. Ryan writes in, I was listening to one of your older sound-offs around the time TNA moved to Monday nights. It also just happened to be WrestleMania season. Obviously, TNA got crushed and had to move back to Thursdays. However, do you think if TNA had made the move around post-SummerSlam time, this schedule change would have been more successful? WWE seems to really suck post-SummerSlam all the way up to pre-Royal Rumble. TNA could have capitalized on this annual dead period and offer an alternative to a lacking period in WWE. Do you think this would have made any bit of difference, or do you think they still would have gotten crushed like they did? It would not have made any difference at all. It would not have made a lick of difference. Raw's ratings maybe would have been lower than they would have been during WrestleMania season, but they would have gotten crushed either way. They were not ready for the move. And at that time, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure on the sound of, I was all for it. I was all for them taking the chance. You don't know until you try, and I thought they had the talent there to, you know, make it interesting and maybe make it work, make some kind of a dent, and I was wrong. And they had them, you know, it went back to Thursday night. They kind of whimpered back there, and it really did not make them look good at all. But it opened up a lot of eyes at that time that no matter how hot they thought the product was and how many big names they thought they had, they were so much further behind WWE than anybody could have expected. I mean, they got shellacked. And I don't think if they would have waited 6 months to do it, things would have been all that different, let's say, in TNA, where it would have made any difference at all. I mean, they just were not ready. They have never been ready, and they likely will never be ready. I hope someday there is a wrestling promotion out there that could compete on a Monday night with WWE. I don't think it will happen. And it's certainly not going to happen with TNA. TNA, in a lot of ways, is like, you know, I talked about Jack Swagger a minute ago. TNA is like a mid-card guy in WWE that has been around for so long, and you don't know how they still have a job. You don't even know how they're still around, but they are, so you give them credit at least for that. But they've been around for so long, and their name is so tainted, and they're so pigeonholed in that position that no matter what kind of peaks and valleys they may have, and they may go up, they may come down, they will never, ever, ever be looked at a top level, no matter what happens. It's just not going to happen. So TNA, in a lot of ways, is like that mid-card guy in WWE that gets the start-and-stop push and has been around for so many years. You can't just snap your fingers one day and expect that all of a sudden, after being around in TNA's case for 12 years, 12 and a half years now, that one day they're just going to suddenly find that magic formula and they're going to beat WWE because they've tried everything under the sun. They tried to move to Monday nights. It didn't work. They brought in every big name under the sun. Hulk Hogan, Sting, Ric Flair, Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, Booker T, Kevin Nash, on and on and on. Didn't make a difference. Hardly even made a dent. It made a big dent in their pocketbook. It made a big dent in their bank account. But that's it. That was the extent of it. And that TNA brand has been so stained now. Those initials have been so stained. And the leadership, as long as the leadership doesn't change and the same leadership is in power, I guarantee you, nothing will ever change. I said that a few weeks ago. As hopeful as I was for the big move to Destination America, when Dixie Carter did that interview and made the comment about how, you never know, I might bring back Vince Russo to TNA. He's a smart guy and blah, 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 blah. As soon as she said that, I said that was it. Any hope I had for TNA to one day turn things around was flushed down the toilet with that comment. because of what that comment represents. That comment represents something that is so awful, I think, to the long-term future of TNA, that unless Dixie Carter and the Carter family stepped aside and somebody else took over, and maybe they're worse. But you know what? Maybe they're better. Until that happens, nothing is ever going to change. So that's the comparison I would make. And just to kind of round back to your original question, it wouldn't have made any difference at all. Charlie from Manchester, England. Is there any move in wrestling that could not get over, at least with a casual audience? Keeping in mind I am British, so I have seen some really preposterous moves, including but not limited to hypnosis, back rakes, and that weird move where you put someone's head between your legs like you're about to pile drive them, do a little bunny hop, and for some reason their neck is hurt. Look, we are living in a world with moves like the People's Elbow, Mr. Socko, Santino's fucking Cobra, the Five Knuckle Shuffle. Get the picture? Any move can get over. If those moves can get over, trust me, any move can get over to a casual audience. All it takes is a little bit of a push. You know, if there was a guy that had a really goofy move, but WWE was behind it, and they did it every single week, and they came up with exciting situations and matches for the guy to do the move, no matter how ridiculous it may look. The Cobra is maybe the best example of this. If that can get over, anything can get over. Anything. That's the answer. Anthony from Bolton, UK, and we'll wrap up with this. With the success in UFC over the years, are you surprised that WWE did not try to capitalize on that success and go down a more fighting route? I remember The Undertaker commenting in an interview many years ago that he thought in time he could see WWE getting more fight-based. Do you think WWE missed the boat by going down the reality-slash-celebrity route instead of a more sport-slash-fight-based product? Yes and no. Here's the thing. I think they missed a chance to incorporate more sport-based elements into the product. I can't say that they should just become a fight-based product, because I'd say Ring of Honor is a lot closer to that traditionally than WWE is, and Ring of Honor does maybe 10,000 buys if they're lucky on pay-per-view. They will have some sellouts, but they also do shows where they're lucky if they get a crowd of 300 or 400 people. Ring of Honor has not grown that much, that dramatically, since 2002. They've grown. In some ways, they've grown even more than TNA has, even though TNA is still above them because they had a better TV time slot. But Ring of Honor has not grown that much. They've not grown exponentially since the early days of the promotion. You know, are they on a major cable network? No. Even TNA has national TV. Ring of Honor, you know, is syndicated in parts of the country. I don't have Ring of Honor, and I'm in one of the biggest markets in this country. How is it possible that I'm in New York City and I don't have access on my television screen? I'm not talking about online. How is it possible that I don't have Ring of Honor after all these years? How is that possible? I don't even know that Ring of Honor is in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is like their home base. Again, tell me, how is that possible? Even TNA has national TV. Ring of Honor, if they had it, you know, look, if people wanted that kind of product, if the mainstream audience wanted that kind of wrestling product, Ring of Honor would be a solid number two right now. And if people want straight sport, they'll watch UFC. That's what's so funny to me. You know, people will say, you know, maybe WWE should do exactly what UFC is doing. I mean, they go to the extreme. We're not talking about borrowing elements. Like, there are people who will write into me and say, why isn't WWE just doing exactly what UFC does? They're so much more successful. Their pay-per-views do so much more business, which is not entirely true these days. You know, their pay-per-view business has suffered as well. Why don't they do that? Why don't they do that? If people wanted to watch straight sport, they would just watch UFC. They're not going to watch WWE to see fights, because WWE can never be what UFC is. The fights are fixed in WWE. You can't change that. It is what it is. But what you can do, you can make the product more believable. You could take things a little more seriously instead of making a fucking joke out of everything. You could do that. Some of the most memorable angles in WWE that they have done in the last several years were based in reality or believability in some way. That first angle they shot at that No Way Out pay-per-view 5 years ago, whatever it was, 6 years ago now, I think, with Floyd Mayweather and The Big Show, was one of the best things they've ever done, one of the best celebrity angles of any kind that any wrestling promotion has ever done. And it kind of went off the rails there a little bit because they booked... It was kind of weird. They were almost booking Big Show as the heel and Mayweather as the face, and that's not how the fans reacted, and that almost ruined the whole angle. But that first angle they shot was done to perfection. Perfection. And it felt real. The CM Punk pipe bomb promo and, you know, the walkout storyline back in 2011, it was based in reality. It felt real because it was real. Parts of it, at least, were real. When Brock Lesnar came back and had that first match with John Cena at Extreme Rules, it was unlike anything we had ever seen on a WWE pay-per-view in years. Maybe ever. Same thing with the Lesnar-Cena massacre at SummerSlam this year. A lot of people thought, man, what a shitty match. You can't look at it like that. It was a massacre. It was done that way for a reason. It was done to shock you. And boy, you know, it worked. Because I can't remember the last time I've seen John Cena as a main event headline guy have a beatdown laid upon him the way that Brock Lesnar did at SummerSlam. And people were probably waiting for that, you know, predictable big John Cena comeback. He always overcomes the odds, only in this case he didn't. He got beat fair and square. And it was a shock to the system, and I loved it. I loved it for that reason, because it was different. And because it got Brock over as a monster, which is exactly what they had to do, given that he beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. So, it's not like WWE is incapable of doing stuff like that, but I wish they would sometimes look back on some of the best stuff they've done in recent years and go back 5, 6, 7 years and look at the stuff they've done. There are examples like the ones I just pointed out, and the reason it worked so well was because it got people to believe. It felt real on some level. This was real serious hardcore shit. The Mayweather Big Show thing, when he punched Big Show in the face and he's bleeding all over the place and he's like a bear charging at his entourage through the crowds, he's stampeding over the fans, and Shane McMahon is there like, no, you're going to kill him. Like, there was nothing jokey about that. There was no punchline. There was no bad comedy. There was no sock puppet. There's a reason shit like that works. Now, you can't do that all the time. I'm not saying get rid of all the comedy in wrestling, but I do think you can take elements of that even now, even today, and you can make it work in WWE. But this notion that they should just be what UFC is, and I'm not saying that that's what Anthony is saying, but there are people who say that. You can't do that, because at the end of the day, if people want real sport, they're not going to watch phony wrestling. They're going to watch real sport. Wrestling has to give them something different. That's where the entertainment comes into play. I'm not against sports entertainment. I don't hate sports entertainment. I just wish there was that perfect balance between what wrestling should be and the entertainment aspect of it, and you put the two of them together and you got a great product. WWE is not giving that to us right now, and that's why a lot of people are just they're cold. They're cold to the product right now. They're indifferent to everything because you can't get behind anybody. Who's there to get behind? What big angle is there to get really excited for? I hope we get that angle going into WrestleMania season. I hope they got something big planned. I hope they have something up their sleeve, because right now, they're not giving us a whole lot of anything to get excited about. Next weekend is the New Japan pay-per-view, which is being brought to you here, at least in this country, by GFW. Global Force Wrestling is carrying the pay-per-view on behalf of New Japan. It is Wrestle Kingdom 9 from the Tokyo Dome, January 4th. It's like their WrestleMania, their big event of the year, big main event, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP Championship, a bunch of other matches on the show, and that is finally upon us next weekend. Now, I have not decided for sure what I am going to do, because the event is going to air live here. I think the pre-show starts at 1:30 a.m. Eastern, and then the show itself starts at 2. It goes all the way to 6 a.m. I'm 90% sure I am not staying up. It's too much of a hassle for me to adjust my sleep schedule and all this other stuff. So the event replays on pay-per-view at 7 o'clock Eastern the next night. That is likely when I will watch the show. So that's the plan at this point. I'm not watching it live. pretty good chance I'll get another sound off up early next weekend. I'll have some time off with the holidays and everything, so I may get the show up a day or two early, and that way I can just stay off Twitter and just stay away from any spoilers that Sunday and just go into the show fresh that night at 7 o'clock, and then I'll just live tweet as I watch it that Sunday night. So I know many of you, when I asked you on Twitter, you guys are going to stay up and watch it live. Some people just absolutely have to watch it live. They cannot wait for the replay. They don't want to be spoiled. You're a better man than I am, because I am... It's a daunting task just to think about. I would rather not screw up my whole sleep schedule by watching it live from start to finish. And the other part of it also is, you know, I'm going to watch the show with my brother. He's also very excited for it. He's watching... Apparently there's a big UFC pay-per-view that I completely forgot about that's also next weekend. So if we were to watch both shows live, that's like a 3 or 4 hour UFC show coupled with a 4 hour wrestling pay-per-view. That's like 7 or 8 straight hours. It's too much. It's just way too much. So I think the plan is that we'll watch UFC live that night and then save the New Japan show for the next night. So that is the plan. And then if that is the case, then I won't be talking about the New Japan show until the following weekend. I'm not planning on doing an extra for that. It would be the following weekend that I would give my thoughts on that. So that's the going plan right now. Hopefully we're all at least going to check out the New Japan show. If you have never seen a New Japan show before, you need to see this one. This is the one that will have Jim Ross doing commentary with Matt Stryker, although you will have the option. I don't know that you will have that option on New Japan World, which is their streaming service. You can get the show for whatever it is, like $8.40, I think, is the subscription fee here in this country. They will have the show. You don't have to buy it on pay-per-view, but I think if you want the American commentary with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker, that I believe you will need to buy the pay-per-view for. And the pay-per-view, I think, is $34.95. It's not like $50 or $60 or anything. Well worth it, especially with pay-per-view pretty much going away anyway for WWE. It's worth the money. I urge you to check it out. If you have never seen a New Japan show before, you will not be disappointed. And I'm also very curious to see how Jim Ross handles it, because this is a new experience for him. He's not familiar with the New Japan product. I think Dave Meltzer has been giving him a crash course in all the different names and the feuds and the rivalries. And it's nice to see that he's doing his homework. I don't know how he'll be the day of the show. I'm sure, look, at the end of the day, Jim Ross knows what he's doing when it comes to wrestling commentary. He did it for so many years. I think he'll do just fine. Stryker, we'll see. I'm not so sure about that, but we'll see. Maybe both guys will impress the hell out of me. But I am very much looking forward for that next weekend, and you should be too. Don't miss that show. Check it out. It's going to be worth it, I'm telling you. Follow me on Twitter. At Solomonster is my handle. Any kind of live tweeting I do during these big shows, you can find it on there. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. You also need to like our fan page in order to gain access to our private discussion group. If you apply for memberships, you just be aware of that. And again, there's going to be a brand new Sound Off Extra going up this weekend, so you'll want to subscribe. YouTube.com/TheSolomonster. Get other people to subscribe to while you're at it. We have a few days left if you want to nominate us for Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. Just go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. That's the place to go. And I have to just say this, you know, the best way to really get back at people when they try to put you down or they're being immature or whatever the case may be, and, you know, not everybody is a fan of the show or they say certain things, the best way to get back at people like that is to support the podcast. At the end of the day, that's the best way to do it. Support this show is the very best thing that you could possibly do. And I would say leave a review in iTunes. Leave us a review in Stitcher. You can rate the show on like 1 to 5 stars. I'm happy to say that in iTunes, I check it every now and then. We are a 5-star rated podcast, which is pretty incredible. And not every podcast is rated 5 stars, even some of the bigger ones. You can check it out yourself. So I appreciate that kind of support. Go on iTunes, go on Stitcher. Let the world know about the Sound Off. Let them know what you love about this show, what makes it so good, and why they should listen. And really, at the end of the day, no matter what people have to say about me or my show, that's the best thing that you could do to really get back at those people. So I would urge you to do that. And that's about it. The final Sound Off of 2014, episode 361. It's been a hell of a year for us. Thank you guys again for all of your continued support in various forms, whether you just listen to the show, if you actually make a donation, buy a shirt, sign up for Audible, whatever you do. Just know that I am ever so grateful to you for it, and I am expecting a bigger and better 2015. Lots of good things to come coming up next year. So with that being said, be well, stay safe, enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend for those of you still celebrating. Happy New Year to everybody. May you have a safe and happy New Year next week, whatever you may be doing. And we will see you right back here in 2015 for more of the Solomonster Sounds Off. So until then, take care, guys. Happy New Year.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. And if you think I'm joking, just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.